what's interesting in the platform mindset, platform economy mindset, is to understand that your competitors of yesterday have to be your partners of today.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to The Safari. This is Morty Singer from New York. And today I am speaking to Adrian Nussenbaum, who is the co-founder and CEO of Miracle Marketplaces. And he is really at the cutting edge of really driving marketplace platforming for everyone who is not one of the digital giants that are out there. And that means being able to take a retailer, a multi-billion dollar retailer or not a multi-billion dollar retailer, and leveraging his technology to allow them to seamlessly become a marketplace, which means being able to add third-party products seamlessly onto their catalogs, onto their e-commerce platforms, and to really be able to drive value in that way. And he's seen it, you know, all from very different vantage points than most of us. And, you know, we talk a lot about the consumer, about the network effect of multiple retailers using his platform, zero-party data, and much, much more. So please do stick around. Adrian Nussbaum, thank you so much for joining me on The Safari. How are you today?
All good. Thank you.
Where do we find you? Are you in London, Paris?
London, yeah.
London. All good. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to speak to me on The Safari. So for those people who've been living under a rock, tell us about Miracle and tell us about marketplaces in 90 seconds.
I wish I could. Under a rock or a cave. Well, Miracle is it's a platform company. It's a software as a service solution that allows retailers, manufacturers, distributors to create and operate their own online marketplace and dropship programs of third-party sellers and suppliers. And Miracle builds around this a suite of connected solutions that allow anything from streamlining the onboarding of, you know, suppliers, product catalog, tapping into a network, Miracle Connect, of thousands and thousands of pre-vetted suppliers, facilitating the paying out to these sellers through Miracle Payout, and also enabling these companies to increase the monetization by having things like sponsored products through Miracle Ads or advanced curation through our personalized engine called Miracle Target to Sell. So overall, Miracle is here to help businesses become platform companies and platform their business.
So that's a word that we use here a lot, platform. So elaborate on what you think and how you see a platform. I mean, I heard this wonderful expression the other day about the Fortune 5, which were all basically the big tech companies. Is it Google, Apple, Amazon? I guess it's Alphabet, Amazon, Microsoft, you know, the big five. And the reason why they are platforms is because they can drop any kind of product down to their billion plus customers. And if they have the good product, they have the customers already. So give them something else and those customers will bite. Maybe riff on that vis-a-vis how Miracle supercharges your B2B and B2C clients.
Okay, we're getting intense already. There was a very interesting article a few years ago published in the Harvard Business Review called Finding the Platform in Your Product, which could have been entitled Finding the Platform in You. And basically, what it means is the idea behind becoming a platform is it starts by understanding that there are ways to reach customers and connect basically customers with products and services that are not just about you having to manufacture, buy, own, ship, hire, own basically the asset that you are connecting your customers with. It's recognizing that you have brand, traffic maybe coming to you, network of partners, infrastructure capabilities, that basically you are in a position where you can create more connections within your ecosystem and you can monetize these connections without having necessarily to operate a business like you've been operating it for the past 50, 100 years. And that's kind of the idea behind the platform economy. And as you mentioned, you know, Airbnb, Uber, Alibaba, Amazon, to some extent, are all platform companies. And it's been the fastest growing business model in the world. And I think if we take a second to, because fundamentally, I truly believe that businesses who don't try to find the platform in them will be gone in maybe 10, 15, 5. You know, we've had a bunch of retail bankruptcies in the last few years, unfortunately. These are all companies I've met as prospects 12 years ago, and I was telling them, guys, if you don't change your business, well, you know, e-com is only X percent of retail. So we're focused on all that square footage we have. I mean, now they're focused on nothing, basically. So I think it's really fundamental to capture why this movement to becoming a platform is inevitable. And it's a bit of a long thing, but I'll do it really fast. If you think of why, when you look at the digital, it basically created three major transformations. The first one, it got rid of all barriers of time and space. It allowed things and people to be connected at any time, anywhere. The second thing it did is it kind of took consumers out of the cave, to take a Plato, Plato, not the Plato, but the philosopher analogy. Before digital, consumers, they had to go to a store to learn about the product. They had to wait for the physical rep to visit them to learn about the product. They had to go to a fair, to a trade show. Today, information is ubiquitous and consumers are much more in power. So they're driving this shift from an offer-led economy to a demand-led economy. That's the second thing. And the third one is that, you know, we talk about technology, but there has been things like APIs, etc., that are making connecting systems much easier than it used to be. So when you add anything, the desire for consumers to have anything, anytime, anywhere, and the ability through systems to make this possible, you understand that any business who's not addressing the anything, anytime, anywhere challenge is doomed. And for the last 20 years, businesses that have moved into e-commerce, they've only looked at the anytime, anywhere. Like, oh, I can order from anywhere at any time. But they've not changed their business model at all. And that's what Miracle was born to allow companies to do, to evolve into the world of platforms and the platform economy.
So let's talk about a very practical example of how a retailer may not have evolved from the way they used to do things. So open to buy. If you are a merchant, you have an open to buy, you know, you have a plan from your planners and they tell you, look, we think we're going to do this amount of money or this amount of sales over the coming quarter. So you have these dollars to go and buy this amount of product. Now, the buyer who has the ability to have discretion to decide to purchase a certain item, some of those items they may want to buy, they may have an instinct on the buy, but they don't feel convinced that they should buy that product. Yet, if you're too risk averse, then you're actually, you know, not being a merchant, you're just being a data jockey. You guys allow someone to say, look, I don't know whether I'll be able to sell this, but maybe I'll just put it on the marketplace and see if it works. And if it works and it's something that I want to get behind, yes, maybe I'll take an inventory position later. But it basically gives a merchant more power to give their customers effectively a vast, endless aisle. Endless aisle is probably not a good example because you don't want to have too much choice. But ultimately, that's one maybe simple example. I'm sure there are others which you can illuminate for us. But how the mindset of the buyer, the merchant, the retailer has been stuck in the way it frankly was designed maybe hundreds of years ago. Do you agree?
I think it's easy to go after buyers and merchants because they are, as you were describing, born out of a time when there was not 50 ways to run a business and a retail business. And most often buyers, merchants have grown strong skills at being able to identify products that consumers might fancy, having the commercial negotiations with the partners, planning for the right demand. So the skills are still there. Mm-hmm. I think what is somehow in some instances limiting the impact that buyers could have before is the way, as I was saying earlier, it's no longer so much an offer-led economy and it's much more demand-led economy. Of course, you know, if you're Louis Vuitton, Hermès, you're still, you know, like Bernard Arnault says, you're increasing the desirability of your products. That's what so you try to capture trends, etc., and you're more of a trendsetter definer. But if you're a retailer today, you have to serve consumers whose source of information have changed. You know, the social media, the instantaneity of the world they live in, the awareness that they have of what's out there. It puts any buyer in a much heightened competitive situation on choice, on availability, on price, which are fundamentally the three pillars of commerce. And it's just that you may be the best buyer in the world. There are brands that don't want to sell through wholesale anymore. I mean, I've talked a lot in the past, even at recently a McKinsey conference, saying like, I think wholesale is dead. Obviously, it's a bit of an overstatement, but when you look 10 years from now, lots of brands they're willing to trade the offloading of their inventory for the control of how they sell and where they sell. Mm-hmm. And so wholesale is changing. Some brands are emerging as pure digital native or pure D2C, and they don't want to have that kind of relationship. They want to control what they sell, how they sell. So the roles are changing and the way consumers are buying is changing. So your initial presentation of the benefits that you could see in basically having those business models live together and not side by side, mm-hmm. The same way that dropship in the past kind of made life easier for large bulky items. You one way to see curated marketplaces is as a way of kind of taking that dropship strategy to a much larger scale.
And so when you think of Amazon, which has a huge piece of their business, obviously, that is which they would call marketplace, and then you think of all these independent but large fractured retailers. Let's just focus on the United States for the time being. I know you're a global company, but I'm sitting here and maybe that's a bit myopic of me, but I'm sure the same as in Europe. You know, these businesses, whether it be a large department store company or a large grocery chain or a supermarket chain, they have the ability to now not only partner with each other through the marketplace network effect, but presumably you are also therefore empowering them, and I'll forgive me the Star Wars analogy, of sort of creating a rebel alliance, as it were, potentially to put up defenses against what might be, you know, to not be too dire, sort of the Death Star, as it were, of Amazon, at least perceived Death Star. How should CEOs of these independent retailers think of you as a a top spin effect to put up defenses.
I mean, your Star Wars analogy is very on point in first in the sense that Miracle has a huge Star Wars culture, and if you visit our offices, you'll see that even the toilets have little Jedi.
Really? I had no idea.
And every meeting room is a Star Wars planet. But most importantly, like trying to fight Amazon solo is a lost game. The most powerful US retailer is doing that. And they're not doing too bad, but they are by far much, much larger than any other. And they are, you know, they're not the largest cloud vendor in the world. They're not the largest marketing company in the world. They're not the largest fulfillment business at least in the Western world, etc. So trying to fight alone is a lost cause. And I think what's interesting in the platform mindset, platform economy mindset, is to understand that your competitors of yesterday have to be your partners of today. And we said that in one of our keynotes probably 6 years ago already. And that's exactly what we're enabling, because when you think of Miracle, it's enabling this kind of multi-sided ecosystem where on one side we're providing our marketplace and dropship platform capabilities to retailers, manufacturers, distributors, allowing them to invite, curate a larger selection from a larger set of vendors. But on the other side, we have Miracle Connect, where tens of thousands of brands and resellers are also listing themselves in order to connect and partner with the more than 400 marketplaces that we power. And what we're seeing more and more is actually within similar spaces, companies actually selling on each other's and developing those kind of like, you know, friendly competition. Mm-hmm. Because they know that ultimately it's the only way to resist. And we're seeing, you know, the ones who execute well, because unfortunately not all our customers execute well, but the large number of those who execute well, they are regaining market share. They are seeing an increase in the growth rate of their 1P e-com sales. They're seeing massive increase of their 3P marketplace sales. And they are also seeing increased traffic in store, increased loyalty cards activity, etc.
So when you think about this sort of coalition, do you have, maybe through Miracle Connect, or maybe it's just something academically to talk about or think about, is the empowerment of the end consumer to share their data with you, Miracle, such that you share it with another retailer, so that the one powerful thing about Amazon is that they know me, they know you, they know what I want, they know what I want maybe before I even do. And you, with all this network effect of all these different retailers, you have all these disparate clients and consumers who are potentially able to deliver their data to you so that you can amplify the ability of your network to actually serve them what they want. Do you do that now, or is that something that you will do?
So first of all, we don't call our clients desperate clients. We call them platform pioneers, which I think...
Disparate, I said, not desperate. Disparate clients.
Ah, disparate. Yeah. Okay.
I would never call your clients desperate. They're smart people.
Yeah. Disparate. Yeah, exactly. They are courageous, brave, and that's why we call them platform pioneers. And the ones who dare are actually very successful. And it's interesting because often one of the challenge for us to sell into organizations is that people, you know, the people who could take the decision view that as a risk for their career. And actually, when you look at the Miracle alumni, they're usually, I'm thinking of that because no longer than a couple of weeks ago, the EVP of one of our clients was was basically poached to become CEO of a company. So it's a great way to rise in the world, to be a pioneer and through the strategy. So going back to your point, in a perfect world, you are absolutely right. The ability to mutualize customer data in a, I mean, first of all, compliant, legal, but also anonymized way would be the kind of a holy grail of helping everyone become even better at their customer knowledge. We're not there yet. But what Miracle is kind of trying to do is we actually learn from customers what they are, how they expect to buy and the type of, and we try to translate that in the roadmap that we have in terms of tools, in terms that ultimately impact the customer experience. So everything we're doing on our personalization, retail media, it's very customer influenced. Like when you look at most retail media solutions that were kind of like first generation in the 2010, they were basically built on you pay, you get visibility. The way we've approached it is first and foremost, it has to be good for the customer, and then you can pay to actually have better visibility. And we, you know, when we do those presentations, we show examples of websites that are using other technologies that are kind of more ancient. And it's funny, the one we show often is like you're scrolling through the milk category and you have a sponsored product for beer, which, you know, yes, you may be in the beverage section, but you're probably not buying beer at that given time. So that's an area where we do that. And on the other side, when you think of in kind of those multi-sided networks, you have the end customer, but you also have the vendor, the seller, mm-hmm. who's paying a commission to Macy's to get their products displayed on Macy's when they sell. And we're also using, like we just announced last week, the use of generative AI and our first kind of open AI based to facilitate their experience onboarding their products, making sure that they, instead of trying to recreate themselves the perfect product page, mm-hmm. basically pull that information that is out there to generate those amazing product descriptions that will optimize the conversion, etc.
That's actually a fascinating, I hadn't thought about that, using AI to optimize the highest and best words to describe any given item. And people have, you know, armies of companies have armies of people sitting there trying to write these things. So,
and you know, it's interesting, and I'm going sideways, but yesterday we had a very interesting meeting at Miracle where we were looking at one of the products that we have in our suite and the roadmap, and it's probably one that has been a bit underinvested and where there's a bit of frustration. Yeah, we're kind of not going fast enough, catching up. And for the first time, we kind of got to the conclusion that AI was most likely going to kill that whole industry the way it exists. And so that it would be better as a company to think about how we can use AI to come in with something that's completely disruptive, rather than trying to, mm-hmm. you know, just create a better version of something that already exists.
We'll be right back. I want to take a second to explain to you why Traub is able to bring you the Safari. We pride ourselves in being at the very center of a very global, very complicated consumer and retail landscape. And in our travels, as we help think, manage, and expand businesses in many different channels and geographies, we're able to meet and learn from some of the great minds in this industry. And it's really wonderful to be able to bring them to you. And in doing so, I hope that you, the listener, will be able to learn a little bit more about what we do at Traub as well. Back to the Safari. So you mentioned a few minutes ago this, you know, the customer experience or just eliminating friction. One of the dings that the marketplace gets from most people is, oh, well, you know, there's never in stock. Everything, you know, you get it and there's no way of guaranteeing stock levels of the underlying SKU at the retailer or at the partner. How do you try and optimize for that sort of perception that is out there on marketplaces?
So there's a, I mean, there's many elements to it. The first one is the more sellers you get on your marketplace, the more you sell. And the more you sell, because the more you are likely to excel at what customers value, availability, choice, availability, and price. And so clearly, one of the best way to ensure inventory availability is to have more than one supplier for the same product, which is a mental block for many of the companies we talk to, because they have this kind of like, oh, you're going to turn my website into eBay, etc., into Amazon, and then we kind of get into the weeds of there's ways to do it in a nice way, in a curated way, etc. I think so. That's kind of one way, obviously. Then one of the reasons why Mirakl has been able to create a space where I think, as you were sharing before we started recording, you were quite amazed by the fact that we managed to convince people to join this revolution. One of the things that we've used to do that is, given our previous experience running ourselves a marketplace, we knew from the get-go the importance of vetting, controlling, monitoring, SLAs, everything that basically ensures and ultimately drives to a situation. And once again, our clients often they don't want to believe it, and then they're a bit annoyed when they find out it's true. But those third-party sellers are damn good at doing their job. You know, this idea that
the little guy doesn't know how to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be discriminatory, but so many meetings I walk in and people say, "Yeah, we don't want any of these Chinese sellers like on Amazon." I mean, you know, the world. I mean, first of all, a lot of them are really good. Yeah. but sellers are good, and what the platform that Mirakl provides does is making them even better, and then, as we've also opened up to integrations and collaborations, because we apply what we tell people to ourselves, we are ourselves in a way a platform, an open platform. Now, for example, we have partnerships with a lot of companies in the delivery delivery fulfillment categories, and if you go on some of our clients, you will see very precise delivery time promises, even same day, even within the hour. We even have a client of ours that's a marketplace of spare parts for professional restaurants, kitchens, and they've even integrated a partnership with Uber to allow 1 hour delivery within cities, where basically I'm a chef, something broke down in my oven, I go on Partstown, I order the part, it's maybe provided by a third party seller that happens to be in my town, and a Uber driver can come and pick it up and deliver to me. So it goes around this idea of like putting, combining strengths and creating those platforms.
That's so exciting. It's so exciting. I know that I could pepper you with questions for another 2 hours, which I will not do. But tell me a little bit, as we sort of round this out, where do you've obviously had a tremendous amount of vision over the past decade to build this company. Where do you think Mirakl can be 5 years from now? And the second part of that question is, where do you think, you know, what's your you know, obviously everyone's in a recessionary mood right now. How do you feel about retail in general globally going into and beyond these times that we're in, and maybe Mirakl's ability to help through that?
Wow, that's the crystal ball question. So first of all, I think my biggest vision was to partner with a real visionary, my co-founder, Philippe. And maybe his vision was to partner with someone who wasn't too bad at understanding his vision and sharing it with the rest of the world.
Good for you.
But yeah. And so I think when it comes to Mirakl, we're kind of on a two-dimension trajectory. One is, if you look at the, you know, we have, you know, 500 clients. Last year, I mean, around $6 billion in GMV. This year, probably around eight and a half. marketplaces, overall, let's say a third of online, let's say 15% of offline. So if you think of like percentage, we're still at a very, very, you know, we've managed to get where we are as a company, and, you know, our shareholders are happy. We have 750 people, but we're just a fraction of, you know, the market in terms of. So part of our strategy is just to keep on repeating the same things that we've been repeating for the last 12 years and taking them down one by one in a way. But in parallel, our strategy is really, as I started explaining, like we started 12 years ago, we had this marketplace enabling platform. Now it's a suite of connected solution with allowing, you know, supporting all kinds of platform models, whether it's on a commission model like a marketplace, whether it's still on a wholesale model like dropship, whether it's in B2B where, I mean, I won't get into the details, but more complex invoicing and revenue recognition systems, surrounding that with a lot of tools. So right now we're in financial services, we're starting to get in the money flow, we're starting to get into the monetization, personalization. So we're basically expanding that, always thinking of assuming that businesses get on the ride and transform themselves, what will they need in the 5, 10, 15 years? And then I think when it comes to retail, I mean, for me, there's obviously embracing the platform vision. So definitely, but behind that, it's understanding that for many, many years, retailers have probably believed that their key asset was their physical footprint. For many of them, it has turned into their worst nightmare. I'm not one who says stores are done and doomed, etc. I believe that, you know, store footprint needs to be reduced, especially in the US, reimagined, and that omnichannel doesn't mean order online, pick up in store only.
No, I agree.
Omnichannel is also diversifying your channel of sourcing and ways of distribute products and connecting customers with what they want, but also thinking about you, what kind of channel can you be for what beyond moving boxes?
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to help them figure out.
Yeah, and an optimized retail physical footprint is hugely powerful. I mean, for example, we talk about retail media, but the media value of an optimized physical retail footprint is also incredibly powerful because they're billboards. If you have the billboard in the right environment, the right location, it'll drive that omnichannel experience. And I couldn't agree more.
I think stores are... I mean, if we were to reuse they are influencers, you know. So look at what influencers do to make money, the good ones, and try to think about how that applies to a store, to a business in general.
Well, there we go. That's one way to end. Retail stores are influencers, and you can trademark that, right? I like that very much. Listen, I thank you for being with me today. That's all we have time for. Adrien Nussenbaum is the co-founder and CEO of Miracle. It's been a great pleasure to have you on the Safari. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the Safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.